delight. My motto's always been, when it's right, it's right.
Oh, me. All right, here we go. Good morning.
Oh, good morning, man.
News Radio 92.3, informative, local, well, dependable.
What's that? That's a tribute to the Starlight Vocal Band.
Okay, this was a
request.
Which
really ages us.
Yeah,
really
no. You requested this song. Very specifically, Mike said, I got my song, my favorite band.
I thought we had an anonymous caller.
No. No. I have not heard that song in a long time.
That is old.
If you just joined us, this is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel. Tuesday's Garden Line with Mike Wiggins, and he picked Afternoon Delight for first thing this morning. Okay, then. So we're on a roll already.
Well, it's nice being here.
We're on a roll already.
Here we go.
Okay.
Okay. You doing okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
Great.
Are you?
Oh, no, I'm doing really good. Thanks.
Good.
But it is dry. It is dry.
Yes.
We need some rain, and looking ahead, maybe a 50-50 chance of a little thunderstorm, if you will, later in the week. But that's a toss-up. It really is. So, last week we spent a lot of time on watering and that type of things, so we won't do that again. But just keep in mind, the minimum I'd be watering my yard is 3 times a week, at least 30 minutes. And we said last week, if you live in a part of the county that, has a soil that holds water more than, say, at the beach,
mm-hmm.
You're going to water a little bit more or a little bit less, depending on where you live. But you do need to do that. And, of course, the container plants are just drying out overnight. And we always say on the Garden Line, we've all got a financial interest in keeping these plants alive. Because nowadays, let's face it, expensive.
Yes,
they're very expensive. And so we do everything we can to keep them alive and pretty and able so we can enjoy them.
And best time of day?
Best time of day, morning.
Okay.
Morning. 4, 5, 6 o'clock in the morning, that type of thing. But like we said last week, depending on your own life, I mean, if you have a job where you have to be at work at, say, 6 o'clock in the morning, and you come home in the afternoon, and you say, well, Mike said don't water in the afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Forget what I said. Water it. Just do it when you can.
Mm-hmm.
Because with lack of water is going to be your biggest problem, not necessarily time of day. So we need to get on that. And keep in mind, the experts always tell you that your lawn will tell you. It will tell you when it's dry. I don't like waiting that long, but if you are looking at your St. Augustine grass, for example, and the grass blades are kind of folding up, that's really your lawn's telling you it's too dry. If you're walking across your lawn and you look back and you can see where the indentations are where you stepped,
mm-hmm.
that's your lawn telling you that it's up too dry. So, once you get that far along, I think you should have done it before. But just keep in mind, it is very dry. Don't see any rain of any amount coming anytime soon. So this is what we've got to do. Spend some time doing that.
Does the same go for container plants, or do you need to do those more often? Because some are different, or are they different?
Well, I think sometimes it depends, one, on the size of the container,
mm-hmm.
and two, on the type of potting soil that you use.
Oh.
Sometimes you can buy a kind of a mucky potting mm-hmm. soil that I don't like at all, but it's going to hold moisture a little bit better. But some of your lighter soils, I have some caladiums in pots that I have planted, and they haven't come up yet. But every afternoon I look at them, and the pots just as dry as it can be. And these are relatively smaller pots, 12, 14-inch pots.
Mm-hmm.
But they dry out so fast, so very fast. So you're right. You need to really pay attention to those, because so many people have container plants,
mm-hmm.
especially your tropicals.
Yes.
And so pay attention to that for sure. Okay. One other thing I want to do before we start, and this is kind of interesting. I don't know if people are going to find this interesting or not. I did. There's a guy named Daniel Leonard. Daniel Leonard is a county agent in Calhoun County. Now, Daniel Leonard sends out a, I'll call it a little newsletter. It's kind of a one-pager once a week on gardening in North
Florida. Oh, nice. Okay.
It's really kind of cool. Has some great things. But the thing about Daniel Leonard, I've never met the young man. I'd like to meet him because his writing is really interesting.
Huh.
And so I'm going to address just one thing I got from him because it does speak to some things that we deal with here. By the way, Daniel Leonard, I looked him up. He's got a master's degree in agricultural education and communications.
Interesting.
Agricultural communications. Interesting major.
That should be your degree now.
Oh, really? I hadn't thought about that.
Yeah.
Okay. Anyway, this is his article, and we'll spend just a second or two on this. His article is entitled, Another Plea to End Crepe Murder. Now, keep in mind, we've talked about crepe murder on this show many a times, which really is pruning crepe myrtles incorrectly. But listen to some of his words here. He says, crepe myrtles are easy to grow. They're beautiful. They're resilient little trees. But they aren't invincible. They're only as pretty as gardeners allow them to be. I love this sentence. He says, in fact, one of the best ways to ensure a poorly formed, bizarre-looking, disease-prone, short-lived crepe myrtle is to commit crepe murder.
Oh, my gosh.
And he defines crepe murder as the twisted art of pruning specimens back into horrid shapes.
Oh, my goodness.
He said, once shapely trees are well-developed, crowns and attractive branching structure are reduced to a ghastly, sawed-off, fence post-like appearance.
It's very descriptive.
Man, can this guy write or what?
Wow, yeah.
But anyway, he says, why is that happening? And then he kind of gets serious here. So there's one primary reason, and that's wrong plant in the wrong place.
Mm.
Because there are different types of crepe myrtles. There are your traditional types like Natchez and Muskogee, those are names, which are your taller growing. They'll grow 30 to 40 feet.
Wow.
Okay, and people put them in the wrong place, and so they start cutting them back and create crepe myrtle. But also, there are some shorter growing crepe myrtles, and he lists the names. Acoma, Catawba, the entire Magic series. Those are great smaller crepe myrtles that you might be a better option to plant. Then there's some that are even smaller growing, some of the dwarf varieties. So, in any event, pick your variety of crepe myrtle according to the place where you're going to plant it. Because, and here, you'll love this word. I'm going to give you a test here.
Uh-oh. Ready?
Okay. So, if you know somebody who has fallen victim to the above reasoning on crepe myrtle and dabbled in dendrological decapitation.
Oh, my gosh.
Do you know what dendrology is?
No, I don't know. I've never heard that in my life.
Okay, now I've been in this business for 1,000 years, and I did not know what dendrological studies were.
Okay, and you looked it up, I hope.
I did. It's it's the study of woody plants.
Wow.
Trees, if
okay.
you will. Okay.
All right. We're going to take a break on that note. So be
okay.
thinking about
dendrological decapitation.
Ooh, that sounds like a horror movie. Okay.
Right.
We are listening to The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins on Pep Talk, 850-437-1620. We'll be back right after the break. Good morning. This is Pep Talk with Meg and The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. And we had a opening song, Afternoon Delight, and we got a text, Mike, that came in that said, Mike, it's Starland Vocal Band, not Starlight.
I knew that.
And he says, I love the show.
I made a mistake. but let me tell you what, I appreciate being called out on that because I'm very embarrassed. And I said,
We're just going to move on from that, but thanks for straightening us out.
Hey, we're known for our music here on the ground.
Mm-hmm,
no
mm-hmm.
doubt about it. I got to finish up here, this okay. Daniel Leonard thing, because I found it kind of really cool. Okay, he says, So you've got a crepe myrtle that has the victim of dendrological decapitation. All right. So what do you do? Two things you can do. One, just let it grow. Never prune it again. Just let it grow. Now, you're going to have a lot of little limbs in there attached to this big, fat trunk. But Daniel Leonard says, he didn't say I've talked to some crepe myrtles, but he said I've seen some crepe myrtles rehabbed in this manner, and they've enjoyed a nice, long life. this guy's good.
Sounds very eccentric.
Okay. The better method is to wait till next winter when your crepe myrtle is dormant. Okay, and then you break out the chainsaw.
Oh.
And he puts in his article, that's a suspected murder weapon.
Are you sure this isn't a horror film?
No, this sounds like it. This is cool.
Gosh.
Okay, he says, cut out the chainsaw. And what you need to do, cut the entire tree down to the ground.
Oh.
Down to the ground. Then in the summer, all the growth will come up. And then when you get into the next winter, when it loses its leaves again, pick out the best 3 to 5 evenly spaced canes on the crepe myrtle and remove all the rest. And then let her go. And you'll never have to prune it again, except maybe lightly, as it grows. So now you've got the crepe myrtle with 3 to 5 canes, and you can have a traditional-looking pruned crepe myrtle. Anyway, okay, so last but not least, Mr. Leonard says, so put up the chainsaw, enjoy your status as an enlightened gardener, and resolve to never prune your crepe myrtles ever again.
Gosh.
Okay. I'm sorry. I just had to share that. And you know what I'm going to do?
What?
He's over in California. I'm going to call him this afternoon.
You should.
And tell him we talked about it. And how
have
much,
him on the show.
Wouldn't that be fun? That's a great.
Invite him to be on the show.
Yeah, nothing else. He could call us.
That's true. Let's
talk about his article, another plea to end crepe myrtles.
Because clearly you're intrigued by this.
I am. I don't know why. I just like good writing. And to make
pruning crepe... Yeah, it makes me nervous, Mike. Chainsaws, decapitation. These are the things that make good writing
still,
for you.
But still, it's kind of tongue-in-cheek, the whole article there.
I gotcha.
But it's when you can make pruning crepe myrtles a very interesting, fun article, you've got a talent. So
that's true.
Anyway,
that's true.
Okay.
All right, we'll call him. All right, we got a bunch of questions coming in.
Oh, good.
This is the Garden Line, and it's springtime. Everybody's taking care of their gardens and lawns. If you want a question, have a question for Mike, 850-437-1620. Text it on in. So right off the bat, we got a question about, hang on now. Let's see. Well, one of them was a question for Mike. Any reports of hummingbirds in the area? I usually have some visiting by this time of year, but have not seen any so far, and I live along I-10.
Well, I kind of do, too. I live in the same area right on I-10. And we have two hummingbird feeders that we have put up with fresh food ready to go. And we had two hummingbirds about 10 days ago. Have not seen one since.
Huh.
And I got clean hummingbird feeders. We mix up the food with sugar water and all that type of stuff. Haven't seen, been waiting for them. And so we both decided at home that, they'll be here maybe mid-May, but that's just a guess.
Interesting.
Because they are so much fun to watch.
Oh, they're beautiful.
They are beautiful and they're fun. And last year we had so many of them, it was like you were watching the Blue Angels.
Maybe they heard about the snow.
They could have heard about the snow. Maybe they've talked to Daniel. Exactly. Who knows? I'm optimistic that we're going to see them, but I'm in the same boat as you are. I have not seen one in a couple of weeks, and then we only saw two.
Right.
And they were little ones, little babies.
Huh.
So,
interesting.
I don't know.
All right, well, keep your eye out and let us know.
Yeah, let us. If you get them, let me know.
For sure.
And I'll do the same.
Okay, so totally different subject now. A new question, 850-437-1620. Is there anything I can spray on dollar weed, which is embedded in my jasmine? That's from Steve on Escambia Bay.
Steve, I don't know anything that's really going to work to do that. There are some products out there. Preen, I think, is the name of one, which is a pre-emergence you could put in your jasmine that would keep them from coming up. But other than manual labor, I don't know of any chemical that you can overspray that jasmine with. Now, if our man Paul is listening, because he deals in those ground covers all the time, if he's come up with something new, I'd love to hear about it. But in my experience, I just don't know what you can use without damaging the jasmine. Of course, if it was a natural area and you had no jasmine, say just a big pine straw area, Roundup is your answer. Mm-hmm. It will kill dollarweed in a second, but you don't want to put it next to desirable plants like jasmine, because then I think you'd see some damage.
Mm-hmm.
So that's better leave that to go out and do the best you can by pulling them up, but that is no fun.
Well, speaking of Paul with Blue Sky Landscaping, he sent in a note when we were talking about watering and container plants.
Yep.
He said, send in a note. So thank you, Paul. Terracotta pots need more frequent watering than glazed pots.
Well, he's absolutely right.
I didn't know that.
Well, and that's because you're going to get your moisture and they're porous. And so that's going to just dry out even quicker, obviously, mm-hmm. because the heat and what have you are going to make that soil dry out much quicker, all the way to the bottom, because it's all totally porous mm-hmm. on that clay. So he's absolutely right. A glazed pot will not dry out quite as fast, but I wouldn't take that to the bank on every plant I have. Some plants are more sensitive to dryness, and you just have to look at them. And the old Garden Line technical way to look at this, to stick your finger down in that dirt, and if it's moist, you're cool. Mm-hmm. If it's dry, you're not.
Okay. On that note, we're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins, 850-437-1620. If you have a question, we'll be back in just a couple minutes on Pep Talk. Good morning. This is Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg and The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. Okay, Mike, so we were talking a little bit about hummingbirds.
Yes, yes.
Someone was asking about changing the water, the sugar water.
Right. Well, and of course, that can be a chore. You know, mm-hmm. it takes a little bit of time to do it. I would say I would change it probably once a week. Once a week. But also one thing that I've read about is that, of course, with sugar water, sometimes your hummingbird feeder will get a little bit of mold growing in it. And so you need to, when you empty it out to put the new in, need to clean that out as best you can.
Okay.
They want the hummingbirds like a clean hummingbird feeder with fresh liquid in it.
See, I would think it'd be more often than that, but just once a week.
Yeah, well, that's me.
Oh, okay.
That's me. I think once a week, that's when I do it. But you may do it more often.
Okay. But, well, great questions coming in. This next one is about grass. That this person said, I need some grass and fast. It looks like it says, what is your opinion on Scott Sun and Shade Seed Rapid Grass brand? I don't need anything permanent just to last a year. And how often do I need to water it? Sandy soil in Southwest Pensacola. I tried Scott's Easy Patch and it didn't take.
Yeah. What did they call the product?
Scott's Sun and Shade Rapid Grass
exactly.
brand.
That's almost too good to be true.
Mm-hmm.
to have a grass that is a warm season grass
mm-hmm.
Planted in Pensacola. Now, we have cool season grass like ryegrass, which is exactly what they need. But, of course, you don't put it out in the summer. You put it out in the fall, and it'll last all winter and then go away about this time of year.
Mm-hmm.
So a ryegrass is easy. That's an annual Oregon annual ryegrass. That's the way to do that. Some of these products, and I don't want to speak ill of the one she's used or is talking about, because I don't see the label. I don't know what's on there. But many times, if you look closely on the label, it'll have things like bluegrass or fescue. Well, these are great grasses if you live in Charlotte, North Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
But they're not really built for us. We're just too hot. You put them out right now, they're just going to burn up. So to answer their question, the only grass seed that really is used a lot in our area is centipede grass seed. It's a small seed, covers a big area. It looks expensive. It's about, I don't know, $25, $30 a pound, but that'll cover a couple thousand square feet. Preparation is the key there. You've got to really have a nice, soft, flat, moist dirt. Sow the seed. A lot of people will mix it up with builder sand to give it some bulk. Rake it in and water every day.
Okay. Well, great question. Did you want to add to that?
I do. When we come back, we'll do that.
All right. We're going to take a quick break here so we can catch up on the news. This is The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins on Pep Talk. If you've got a question for Mike, we're going to be back for another half hour, 850-437-1620. This is a great morning to get started with The Garden Line.
Let's do it.
All right, here we go.
between a night of lavender, baby.
Okay, good morning. This is News Radio 92, the Starland Vocal Band. You said you had the whole album.
Well, that was in 1970.
And News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. No, you're not listening to a past classic rock station. This is Meg with Pep Talk and having fun with Mike Wiggins. It's the Garden Line. Let's get serious and talk about gardening. Have Ellen on the line.
Right, before we talk to Ellen, just real quick. We talked about planting centipede seed.
Yes.
They wanted to have a grass. That's a permanent grass, of course. It lasts, you know, much more than a year. But one of the questions is, when should you do it? If you had asked me any time during the year, when should I sow centipede seed, I would say mid-May. So we are right there because the turf has warmed up. You could sow centipede in the winter and nothing would happen.
Mm-hmm.
But as long as the turf warms up, that seed is going to come up. So that's the timing is right to do that. So
okay.
That's centipede seed.
All right. Very good. Talking to Mike Wiggins with the Garden Line. And we do have a caller. Ellen, you're on the air. You have a question for Mike?
I do.
Okay. Go ahead.
I have in my grass, in one particular area, I have this long bladed grass growing up all over, just, you know, about 5 feet by 6 feet. And I can't seem to get rid of it. I've put all kinds of spray on it and to kill it, and nothing seems to kill it. What can I use without killing the rest of my grass?
How big is it, did you say?
It's long blades. It just sticks straight up, and it grows very fast.
How tall?
And
how tall?
Oh, well, about 2 inches.
Oh, okay.
Taller
okay.
than the regular grass. Yeah.
You know, one thing it could be, and that's hard to, that's really a hard question to answer without seeing it. But in some grasses where you may be near a liriope, a monkey grass border, you'll get monkey liriope to come up in your grass. And it does. It has a little wider blade. It'll grow up about, you know, even 6 to 8 inches, if you will, depending on the variety of liriope. There are dwarf varieties. But that could be it. That's a real reach on my part to say that's what it is. But the answer to the question is there's really nothing you can spray it with that's going to get rid of it, because anything you put on there is going to kill your good grass. Now, you can get it out manually. You can dig it out. Or what you may need to do is send Meg and I a picture of this particular weed. Get down as close as you can, because if I'm wrong on this liriope answer, it could be some type of broadleaf weed. Now, if it's a broadleaf weed, there's a product called Trimec, T-R-I-M-E-C, that you could spray on it, and that will generally take care of the broadleaf weed. If it's a what we call a grassy weed, like crabgrass and that type of thing, not so much. But if it's a broadleaf weed, this time of year, before it gets too hot, you can spray Trimec on it. You may want to try that, or send us a picture, and we can be a little more definite about what we're talking about.
All
right. Okay, thank you so much.
Oh, good luck to you.
Thanks,
good luck.
Ellen. Uh-huh. All right, you're listening to Pep Talk, Pensacola's expert panel with Meg, and this is The Garden Line, and Mike with Mike Wiggins. Mike, we had a couple things about hummingbirds. Did you want to go there, or what do you want to go next?
No, I think we've about covered that. I think we're just all sitting here waiting, and obviously keep the hummingbird feeder clean.
Yep.
Keep the liquid fresh.
And let's see, we had a friend that someone said sent in that they had a friend with hummingbird feeders who, said that she was seeing mold on hers in a day 3 or 4 after filling it up this year. She says she had one hummingbird visiting her multiple times a day, and she lives on the west side of Lillian. And then Catherine just texted in, when temps get above 94, hummingbird food should be changed every fourth day.
Very good. Okay.
Okay.
And let me tell you, Catherine knows.
Yes.
Catherine knows. And I got to ask Catherine a quick question. Have you had hummingbirds yet in your yard? I know you put up hummingbird feeders, I would be interested to know if Catherine, if Catherine's got them, I am really jealous.
Oh, okay.
A little envy here.
All right. So if you have a question for Mike, 850-437-1620, you can go ahead and text it on in. And then we have one more question about an armadillo. Do you want to go there this morning?
Well, armadillos are is an interesting topic. We got into that, I'm going to say 3 or 4 years ago on the Garden Line, and had some interesting calls from our folks who text us.
But
here's the story. The story on armadillos.
The person says, I have a bad armadillo issue. What can I do to repel them?
Okay, that's the deal. That's the key. All right. Armadillos are after insects. So there's nothing that I know of that will will control an armadillo. But what you need to do is treat for the insects that they're after. Generally, they can be on the perimeter of your property. Maybe you've got fences around there. You can use a granular insecticide or a liquid insecticide for that matter. Spectracide has a good one. And go ahead and spray to kill the insects. And the armadillos should go somewhere else. Now, armadillos are going to be a little bit like moles. You're going to find them probably in areas that have, say, homes under construction, where their habitat has been disturbed, and so they're going to leave. And, of course, I always find it interesting, some of the experts, and maybe they're not experts so much, as to why do we have armadillos in Northwest Florida? They should be in Texas.
Exactly.
So in any event, what they told me, they said, Mike, these armadillos get on these trucks. They wander onto these trucks, and they get into Northwest Florida, and they either fall off or they jump off. He says, so you see armadillos, believe it or not, closer north and south of I-10 than you do in other areas.
That's unbelievable.
Well, it is unbelievable. It may not be the absolute truth, but that's what I was told.
I just have this image of hitchhiking armadillos coming our way, vacationing in Florida. That is wild.
That is wild. So armadillos, they can be a problem. There's no question about it. You know, loosening up the lawn and that type of thing because they're after the insects. But treat for the insects, not the armadillo.
Got it. Okay, very good. Thank you for the question. Catherine responded to your question. She's only seen one hummingbird so far.
You and me both, Catherine. I've seen the one little bitty ones. So I think we're just waiting. And I'm going to start changing my liquid every 4 days?
On the fourth day.
On the fourth day.
If it's above 94 degrees.
Very good.
Okay, so that's good advice.
That is excellent advice. Thanks, Catherine.
Okay, now here's another question that just came in. Hey, Mike, I think I heard you say to use 16-4-8 for centipede this time of the year. Is it also good for St. Augustine? Thanks, Max.
Absolutely. It's good for St. Augustine. It's good for zoysia. It's good for centipede grass. And here's the deal about 16-4-8. One, I hope you can find it. I've had some of my friends look for it and not be able to find it, probably in some of the big box stores. I would check with Larry out of Pensacola Seed and Garden or Werner Turf, see if they by chance have it. Now, the 16-4-8 formula is one I've used for years and years. But if you find a formula that has, just give you an example, 22-4-4, all right, which means it's got higher nitrogen, low phosphate, and not much potash, which you don't really need much this time of year. That's probably a good one too. But you've got to look at the characteristics of the fertilizer. Is it a good granular? Is it slow release? Does it have minor elements like iron and magnesium? Be sure to look at the coverage of what you buy to be sure that you've done your arithmetic and you're not putting it out too strong where you could damage your grass or too weak where you're wasting your money.
Okay, great question. And if you've got a question for Mike on the Garden Line, you can just send it in at 850-437-1620. We'll be back right after the break. This is Pep Talk on News Radio 92.3, informative, local, dependable. Good morning. This is the Garden Line on Pep Talk with Mike Wiggins. And we got a bunch of texts that have come in, Mike. So I'm going to rattle these out and we'll see if we can do sort of a quick answers for them, okay?
Lightning round.
Lightning. There you go. Lightning round. I like that. Okay.
Let's do it.
So for the first one was, how do you get rid of clover in landscape beds?
Okay. A couple of things you can do. One, you can use a pre-emergence that you can put into a flower bed. That preen is one that I think works fairly well. But if it's already there, the only spray that I know that really is going to get rid of it is Roundup. And we probably don't need to get into that today, but Roundup has changed formulas. Roundup had some major problems. The new Roundup, it looks like the same container, but it's a different formulation. But it does just the job. So if you can spray Roundup just on the weed in your flower bed and doesn't touch the plant, that's good. You know what I have found that really works well? I used to mix up the Roundup.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of trouble. But these new containers that have a little wand with them, it's a battery-powered wand, where you can get right down on the weed. You won't get it on your feet. and they really are safer, and they're easier, and it's not cheap. But, boy, it will work. Because if you're putting Roundup in a flower bed, let's say you have an azalea, and you've got a weed right next to it. If you can just spray that weed right on the weed, the Roundup will not translocate from the soil into the azalea. I've had people put pieces of cardboard in front of the azalea and spray the weed.
Okay.
So that's one thing about Roundup that's very, very good.
Well, I think you just answered the next question, which was, can I paint the dollar weed with Roundup? So basically that's what you're saying.
Oh, absolutely. Okay. Now, it's really interesting. Back in time comment, and I don't even think there's available. Roundup, when it first came out, sold a long one. It was about 4 feet long, and it had a sponge on it. And you would put the Roundup in the kind of the handle mm-hmm. of the wand, if you will, and you had a sponge. And so you could go to your dollar weed with that sponge on the end of that pole and kind of just paint the dollar weed with it.
Okay.
And it would work. Because Roundup, once you get on that growing foliage, it will translocate to the roots mm-hmm. and kill the weed, root and all.
Okay.
So that's, yes.
Okay. All right, next question. Our bottle brush tree took a big hit across the area as well. And hummers love them. Please tell listeners not to give up on their bottle brush. All of mine are putting on new growth. We live in Pace, and so many have the tall growing bottle brush shrubs. No hummers yet.
Well, let me tell you what, bottle brush is one of my favorite plants. I mean, I love the blooming on the bottle brush. And my favorite bottle brush plant is right outside the studio. Big and I can turn around in our chairs
it's right
and
here,
look at the
us.
Bottle brush. And it too is putting on some new growth. Yes, don't give up on it. Bottle brush can have a real problem. It had a major problem way back in the day when we went down to single digits. A lot of them didn't make it. But I think this year, give it time, and I think you'll be fine.
Okay.
It's a beautiful plant.
Okay, and we had another text that came in that said, we've had many hummingbirds on our coral honeysuckle.
Really? I wonder if that's this year or over the years.
I don't know.
I don't either. I don't either, but we need to find us some coral honeysuckle and plant it if they've got a bunch of them this year. That is great. I really appreciate you letting us know that, because that means they're around.
They're around.
They just need to come to my house.
Okay, I think I got to everyone's questions so far. If I missed one, please forgive me. And we have questions this morning about quite a few different topics here.
We did.
Yeah, and hummingbirds.
And that is great.
Hummingbirds, lawn, all kinds of good stuff.
Armadillos.
Armadillos, yeah.
I'm kind of surprised we didn't hear more about the armadillo. But anyway, that's so very interesting. Yes, there's so much that needs to be done. I did want to mention one thing. This is not much fun, but it's the way it is. People are growing tomatoes. A lot of people love to grow them, and they're so much fun. Different varieties, you know, the larger tomatoes, the cherry tomatoes. But one of the real problems that can occur is called blossom end rot.
Ooh, oh, that doesn't sound good.
It does sound bad, because one day you walk out and look at your plants, and you've got a beautiful tomato almost ready to pick, Then it's got this leathery brown patch at the blossom end of the tomato. And it's just, that tomato is no good anymore. But don't give up on your plant. If you get blossom end rot, take that tomato off and throw it away. But the rest of them should be fine. Blossom end rot is caused by a lack of calcium in the plant system. It's not necessarily lack of calcium in the soil. It's lack of calcium in the plant system caused by inconsistent watering. In other words, you flood it one day, let it go a week, then you flood it some more. Do it on a regular basis. Too much nitrogen fertilizer. The 16-4-8 we talked about for the lawn, no. Don't use that for your tomato plant. You want one with lower first number, lower nitrogen. And root damage, over-cultivation. If you're weeding your tomato bed, be careful not to dig up around it too much. So that's blossom end rot, a real frustrating problem, but it doesn't have to be the end of the world. Take it off, throw it away, get back to watering regularly, use the right fertilizer, and you should be okay.
Great. Okay. We're listening to Pep Talk and The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. We'll be back right after the break. Good morning. This is Pep Talk and The Garden Line with Mike Wiggins. We had a couple comments that came in during the break. The woman that was talking about seeing the hummingbirds on her honeysuckle, the clover honeysuckle, she said she's in Gulf Breeze, Soundside.
That's good. That's good to know.
So
Please send them our way.
Definitely.
If you would, please. Thank you for that. That's interesting to know that they're around, so they will make it to the rest of us in a timely manner, I'm sure.
Okay.
Thanks for that text.
Let's see. We had a couple of thank yous for your comments. You had answered a couple of questions, so thank you for texting that in as well. And then there are several. Where's the one on the bottle brush? We had... I'm trying to find it out. Okay. There are several YouTube videos explaining the science, Steve on Escambia Bay, and that was about the blossoms.
The blossom.
Oh, here we go. He had said for the issue about the, you can use Epsom salts. This is for the tomatoes, I believe.
Yeah,
Epsom salts
for the blossom
end
rot.
Yes. Are good for blossom rot. Eggshell powder prepared with vinegar, then with water helps. And then he says there are several YouTube videos explaining the science.
Yeah, and I think that is probably adding the calcium that we're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
I think so. That's a great formula. Epsom salts, that's good.
Okay.
That'll work.
All right.
One other tomato malady that we talk about, we need to make this very brief, I know we got to go, is the wilt.
Mm.
Remember the wilt, which that's the most frustrating when you've got this beautiful tomato plant and you walk out, it looks like somebody poured boiling water on it. Nothing one can do about that. That tomato plant has had it. But just be sure to buy your tomato plants that have an initials on the tag, VFN. That is ingredients, or it's been propagated and developed to be resistant to the wilt. Not immune, but is resistant. So something to keep in mind.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. And we got one more minute left.
Yes.
We talked about using the 16-4-8.
Mm-hmm.
One place you don't want to use it, I don't think, would be on your roses. Buy some good rose fertilizer, because remember, we're fertilizing roses once a month. So that may seem excessive, but they are heavy feeders. So get some good rose fertilizer. Once again, this granular, that's got some iron, some magnesium, that type of thing.
Excellent.
So go for it.
All right. You can hear this again. We put the podcast on our website, newsradio923.com, in case you forgot your pencil to take notes this morning. And we have every broadcast for the last year is on that page, so you can really do some gardening research. Thanks again to Mike Wiggins, our expert on the Pensacola Expert Panel and Garden Line.
Thank you, Meg. You're amazing, Mike.
It's always so much fun.
This is fun. Thank you.
Yes. All right. Thanks, everyone, for your text. Have a great gardening day. We'll be back right after the news.